have these people initially organized, then we'll be able to up that energy. And I totally concur. One demonstration is only one demonstration. And while I think this demonstration will mean a lot, it is only one. But people are becoming organized.
Have you been listening to the show?
What's that?
Have you been listening to the show?
No, I haven't been able to, unfortunately.
Because what I've been doing is I've been reading the text of the five new laws that they are putting through, and it's rather shocking. I'm going to try to have them out in reduced form so people can get a copy of them and see them.
Great.
What organization is there? Is your group have a name that's planning this protest?
Well, you know, there are different different people from you could say different factions. I guess that are all coming together for this common goal. But so there are people from the Frazadelic.com group that was provided the Mamre manifesto, which I was involved with. But no, I don't think that there's one organization, but just a conglomerate of people that are networked.
Have you been out on the streets a bit? Because I know you've been working with Copwatch, right?
Right. Yeah. Well, just getting it off the ground. Yeah.
And you have another meeting for Copwatch planned?
Yeah, we're gonna have a meeting for Copwatch again on Thursday at the Loudonville.
Hello. You're fading out on me there. Hello. I think we'll have you have to call back in. Let's see if we can catch.
Boy, just as we were about to learn when the Copwatch meeting was. Copwatch, for those who don't know, is a group that monitors police misconduct on the streets. They kind of are out there physically present when police officers are engaging in arrests and stops.
Hey, you're on Free Radio again.
Hi, this is Yaakov. I guess I'm just getting bad reception. I'm on a cellular phone. So
you were saying on Thursday, Copwatch meets at the Loudon Nelson Center, and where is that? At what time, I should say?
It'll be at 8:30 at the Loudon Nelson Park. We'll be out on the grass.
Watch out that they don't declare you an illegal assembly after dark. It's illegal to be in the parks after dark.
Yes, this is true.
Though I think they may make an exception for Loudon Nelson. Then you can really watch the police as they arrest you.
Right. Well, no, they do have a sign. It is illegal to be there after dark.
Right, but I think that if the Loudon Nelson Center is still open, it's legal to be in the area. But again, it's never been entirely clear to me.
Yeah, all those things are kind of vague, and certainly they're selectively enforced anyhow. So
this is the fourth meeting of Copwatch. Do you want to give your phone number if people want to either get a hold of you or Copwatch or learn more about the? I guess you're a contact point for the Mamre Manifesto, perhaps. Or is that fair to say?
That would be fair to say, yeah. And people can also, as far as updates on the demonstration, people can keep in touch on the Santa Cruz Indie Media. So
that's www.santacruz.indymedia, indymedia.org, right?
Right. And in case it hasn't been uploaded, you can make sure to get the newest news by clicking on the entire news wire icon. So that would keep you up to date. There's some articles there that the manifesto is online there, and also there's an article that I wrote about the demonstration and about these new ordinances and et cetera. I mean, plenty of people writing articles, but that's one place to find information.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as a contact, I can there are a couple of emails I could put out there. Couple different contacts on email.
Mm-hmm.
One, you can contact Cable. His email is destinationless at ziplip.com.
Mm-hmm.
And I can also be contacted. Yaakov, my email is jacksonbrownow, JACKSONBROWNO, letter O, all one word, at Yahoo.
And I should point out that on a flyer which I put out, the last letter of Brown was miswritten. It's not E, it's O, so it's Brown O, Jackson Brown O.
Correct.
Go ahead.
And as far as a phone number for contact for more urgent issues or ideas, I can be reached. It's area code 831-596-2580.
unless, of course, you're in the free radio studios.
Right.
But that's another story. So,
yes.
So what's your sense? How long have you been organizing now? And you're organizing around the issue of both Copwatch, that's one of your projects, but this other project I think is important, very important, which is to, I like to think of it as not simply opposing a set of stupid laws, but looking for a different vision of the downtown. And that's what the Memory Manifesto really talked about, don't you think?
Right, yeah. Certainly the opposition is there, but, I would agree that the opposition is just, is really, counterbalanced or overarched by the fact that, we believe that there is a much more rational and acceptable way that that the downtown could be run, one in which it wasn't one in which commerce wasn't sacrosanct, but people's rights and their abilities to congregate and really some of the things that were talked about in the manifesto on that note were the fact that we don't believe that tourists come here for to be involved in another sterile suburb of San Jose or the like. Really, we think that the color and that the street artists and the panhandlers and everybody else that are down there, even though that they're not shopping till they drop, they still play an integral role in that dynamic there that we want to continue. And certainly, obviously some panhandlers and some people in general on that street can be quite aggressive, but we just feel like really that the lower class folk or the artists are the ones that are really being played as a scapegoat for
I've seen some particularly aggressive gangs, particularly these characters with the blue uniforms.
Right.
They carry these weapons, long sticks, long kind of black sticks.
Right,
and they have this sort of lethal
traveling packs, and they
have these strange radios that make a lot of noise, squawk boxes. And,
right,
and then
they're terribly well organized, and they act with total impunity.
They do. They I've noticed that they park cars, double park cars on the street.
Yeah,
and they tend to harass ordinary citizens for peculiar reasons. I mean, I don't recall ever having gone up to someone and demanded that they not sit down near a store when they weren't blocking the sidewalk in any way. Have you ever seen that happen? Or? Still there?
I am still here.
Ah, good. Okay, I think you may. I thought I was afraid you were beginning to fade out. Because I don't hear you. Are you there? I think you're fading. So, feel free to call me back again. I was going to ask you what your reaction was to the city council meeting. And also, what you've learned since the city council meeting. Is the temperature on the streets different? The temper of the folks you're talking to. What's the?
Can I be? Am I audible here?
Go ahead. You weren't. Go ahead. Try it. Let's see what happens.
Okay. As far as the temperature on the streets, I guess what I can say is since I have been helping and starting to organize, this first demonstration as an initial step, we've had an incredible amount of support, and really haven't talked to almost anyone at all who didn't feel like the ordinances that are planning to be put in place weren't just entirely absurd. I mean, who would want to criminalize bubble blowing? I mean, ultimately what they're doing is they're criminalizing rain too. I mean, no liquid substance can become airborne, so if rain becomes illegal on Pacific Avenue, I wonder how they're going to treat that.
They could make a few arrests, probably. Yeah,
yeah. Nobody wants their freedom of assembly to be this violently taken away, where six or more people won't be able to congregate for an hour or longer. And obviously
let me interrupt you there for a moment, because that particular part of the Candy Jackson petition is not being explicitly addressed in a law. Instead, what's being done is the police are de facto going after, it isn't just any six people, it is particular groups of people they choose to target. So so the bare breasts and the don't congregate for an hour or more are not specific laws, nor is the no vending, but instead what's happened is the police have been given directives to go after people like for chalking, and, you know, to more closely surveil Food Not Bombs,
right,
and other groups of that sort, to harass street musicians, apparently.
Right. Well, yeah, and with the extension from the 10 to 14 feet from any building or entrance, and then the additional 14 feet now that'll be included, any kiosk or, you know, public walkway to public telephone, anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those in and of themselves are quite awful. I mean, and it'll effectively ban
gatherings unless yeah, you want to. I guess you could stand.
Right. Well, even on one side. Well, yeah, for one whole side of Pacific Avenue, you won't because it's only 10 feet wide.
Well, you'll be able to stand, but you will not be able to sit.
Right.
And
if you're panhandling, you'll have to hold your sign while standing.
Right. And also, if you are trying to be a street musician, you will not be able to perform. And if
right,
you're able, if you want to show your jewelry or something, you won't be able to do that.
Right.
And there is, you will be able to sit, I think, up to 4 feet from a bench, but you won't be able to set up a display or play music 14 feet from a bench or from a cafe,
right,
an outdoor cafe. So there's a whole, what we need to do, of course, is do a map of the mall that will show just what areas are left, which ain't
right,
much.
Right.
And, of course, the danger here is that the city council will make some changes. Okay, well, we'll just make it 12 feet. You know, that'll,
right,
that's what we'll do.
No, I'm sure. I mean, and it seems like the way that they usurped the bare breast was, you know, a strategic concession as well. That, you know, at least as far as I could gather, to try and give us a little, you know, pittance of a victory in the hopes that, you know, that'll
placate
quell our unrest. But that's just certainly not going to happen.
Well, I think what we need to do is eliminate the existing downtown ordinances about sitting 10 feet from a building, which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Buildings should not be sacrosanct. Those are public sidewalks.
Right.
I mean, if you're blocking the sidewalk, that's something. But now this new law about setting down a homeless backpack on the sidewalk that's
right,
unattended,
no
is going to be criminal?
Yeah.
No, I mean,
yeah.
These are deliberate anti-homeless ordinances. I mean, they're going after people who have to be or have chosen to be outside. Many of them have to be. And that's just how it is. So I was about to read some stuff on that issue, which I'm going to do shortly, to kind of remind us that Santa Cruz was chosen as one of the meanest cities in California, and I think it's on the top 8 or top 12 meanest cities in the country on a list of 80, which the...
In terms of police
harassment, in terms of its legal system and the laws it enforces,
uh-huh,
in terms of the rights that homeless and poor people have.
Right.
And
no,
this was... Yeah.
It is a very classist, and anti-homeless, and, you know, as an extension racist system that we are in over here. And I guess, I mean, that makes sense when you think about this being the most expensive place to live in the United States.
That's the engine that's driving this, I think, is a
right,
gentrification mentality.
Exactly.
Here that's not just, you know, like there's a huge gentrification lobby, but I think there's a small group of powerfully placed individuals and certain staff departments in the city,
right,
who want to listen to the cries of a few merchants. And I think
right,
it is a few. I don't think a majority of the merchants have signed on to this shit.
Although there's only six. I mean, there are only the merchants, you know. So we've been calling for a boycott of those merchants.
And I don't even think the Downtown Association has signed on to this, because I think that they're wary of this kind of a fight. As they should be. But it's interesting, the city council to a person has signed on. I don't understand it. Do you have any sense of this? Have you talked to Mayor Crone about this issue? I know I was rather upset that members of the Mamre Manifesto group were schmoozing with council members. I just get, because the council is such a...
Well,
such liars. That's the problem I have. You know?
No, there was one girl that was, I didn't feel so much like she was schmoozing. She certainly doesn't respect those people, but she was, you know, she was reading a poem, and I don't think, you know, it was, I don't think it was her rationale that, you know, that these were people that she respected, but rather that she was going to treat them with compassion even when she disdained them. That was my understanding. But there weren't numerous members that were involved with Mamre Manifesto that were as you said, schmoozing with.
Well, I don't think it was so much
city council, but I haven't personally talked to them or Crone or anything. You know,
yeah, I left a message inviting Mayor Crone to call into this show to defend these ordinances, because he voted for them. You know, he voted to send them all to
right,
the attorney to come back in the form they were in. And you know, they came back in exactly the form, with actually a few more tightening amendments.
Right.
That, you know, they were proposed by the Riley Porter subcommittee or committee, which in no way came out of the hearings that they held. And it's just
right. Which when obviously the hearings were
covered.
Totally bunk as well. I mean, they wait till all the students leave, and then they have a couple public hearings where they don't publicize them, but all the merchants get their special emails, so obviously we see who gets represented.
I mean, and even the hearings, you know, the majority sentiment, as reported by Dan White of the Sentinel, was that the problems downtown had to do with archaic laws and police harassment. I mean, there were other concerns, too, and I'm not saying, I've always said this to Candy Jackson, who I, you know, pretty friendly terms with or have been in the past, that, you know, if there are legitimate concerns, and obviously some people feel there are, then they have to be. We have to sit down and talk about them. But for you to go to city council and try to get laws rammed through is just going to increase the polarization and the tension and the hostility downtown,
right.
And will require us, in essence, to, you know, make the issue. And perhaps the issue should have been made long before, because I've felt for a long time that mercantile commercial interests are behind the criminalization of the homeless around the sleeping ban and other things. And we need, and what we really need to do is get beyond this latest bullshit that they're throwing our way, to recognize what we need to do to sweep away the downtown ordinances and set up our own codes of conduct and set up a situation where this town does return to and become the potentially vibrant and multicultural place it can be.
Yeah. No, I agree. Yeah, it's sad that it took this to get us, you know, together.
Mm-hmm.
This latest step, because you are right. I mean, without I mean, these new ordinances are terribly reactionary, but so are the old ones. So,
mm-hmm.
But you know, at least we're networking now. And
any students are coming together? I mean, I know there's some students around. Are they interested in fighting this stuff? Have you had any talk with gay rights groups or anything happening there?
Yeah. Well, you know, I've been doing what networking I can. I'm not terribly familiar with this area and haven't been here long, so I don't have all the connections that others might, and that's why it would be really wonderful if people would, you know, contact us either through that email I put out or the phone number.
596-2580.
Correct.
596-2580. And we're talking with Jake, who's involved with Copwatch and also in an attempt to mobilize a sane response to insane is perhaps a little strong, but it's certainly very repressive, and a police state response. That's what they're creating downtown. They're creating all kinds
right.
of police options that I don't think the police should be given, and I don't think that's appropriate to give the police that kind of stuff. I mean, you know, it makes their job is to deal with violent crime and, you know,
right.
crimes against property, not to try to socially engineer and gentrify the town.
Right.
I just don't, that's not, I mean, if that's made into their job, I don't think they're competent to do it, but
right.
it's, I mean, if anybody, you know, if you want to hire somebody to do that, I don't think it should be done anyway, but
right.
anyway. So you have a meeting, if you have other meetings you want to tell me about, leave me a message on the Huff line, 423-HUFF, and that goes for anybody listening in, and if, you know, there's some meetings that are not entirely public, let me know about that too, and
sure.
And
if I might, if you do have time, and I might take you a little bit off course. I as far as people that we've been attempting to network with,
mm-hmm.
I the other day I was on Broadway near the corner of Ocean and Broadway, and I saw a large group of Chicanos protesting. So we stopped, and I took some notes, and we got into the Free Radio and the UC Radio, and told them what was going on. And there were a group of people that were out front of the guest house Pacific Inn
mm-hmm.
on Broadway. They were protesting against because the owner, a fellow named Previn Patel, he's the owner of this guest house Pacific Inn, as well as owner of an 18-unit housing project in Watsonville. And in this housing project, they're basically these people are living in shanties without any hot water, and there's huge holes in the floor, and the guy Previn Patel has been mandated through the courts to replace the plumbing, and he's been unwilling to do that, as well as he's given these huge rent hikes to these people with very little money that are living in incredibly dire conditions.
And what's the location of this? Is this housing?
Well, you know, I don't know exactly where the housing project is in Watsonville.
Mm-hmm.
I do know the group that has been organizing it is they're called the Center for Community Advocacy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just wanted to put that out there and see if people could get in touch with them. You know, that's really my hope, is we had some flyers translated into Espanol so that we could coordinate with them, and that you know, we can really unify the struggles, because they had, obviously, it's a intensely important.
That's great. Have you got a phone number for this group? Or?
You know, they didn't have a phone number, but I'm sure you could look up the Center for Community Advocacy.
Is it in Santa Cruz or Watsonville?
I only was able to have a brief conversation with a man.
Well, you know, I think we may have a Free Radio Santa Cruz reporter who actually covered that. He spoke to me before the show. He may be calling in with a report on that very issue. So if you tune to your Free Radio, you might hear some more about it.
Great.
Talking with Jake of Copwatch. Again, Copwatch meets on Thursday, 8:30 p.m. at Loudoun Nelson Center. And I guess there's a meeting of the folks who are trying to have a saner downtown Tuesday, 6 p.m. at the Wired Wash Cafe. And, hey, so there.
Great. Well, thank you, Robert.
Hey, thank you, Jake.
Have a good day.
Free Radio Santa Cruz, where you're tuned. Here's a tune while we're tuning up, so to speak, and we'll tune on.
Bear defeat at the hands of someone not afraid to show them that the bed was made in open invitation to the dance. Never take the chance.
It's not so bad.
That was the wrong song, but it was a nice song from Uncle Banzai, which has got some great stuff I'm going to play a little bit later in the show, particularly one called Penis Envy, which seems particularly appropriate given the Mammary Manifesto stuff that went out at City Council. It's Free Radio Santa Cruz, what you're tuned to, 96.3 FM. I'm Robert Norris. This is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, and we've got another hour or so of Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. In the studio is a wizard, the V-Man, who is directing my every move, or actually covering the situation. He's showing me how to actually work a computer feed here so I can give you the story, which was referred to briefly by Jake, about a demonstration that happened, was it yesterday? Friday night. Thanks, Vinny. Let's go directly to that report.
more than 60 mostly Spanish-speaking farm workers rallied outside the Guest House International Pacific Inn on the evening of Friday, July 12th, to protest a proposed rent increase on their homes in Watsonville. According to Tony Madrigal, a community activist from Santa Cruz, farm workers have been trying for months to convince the landlord to negotiate the rent increase, but the landlord, Pravin Patel, who is also the Pacific Inn's owner, has thus far refused to listen to their complaints.
We tried putting pressure on him in Watsonville, and now we're trying to put pressure on him here in Santa Cruz because we realize that this guy owns land and owns property in a lot of places in the county.
A quick search of the internet turned up the name Pravin Patel as owner of the Travel Lodge in Sun City, California, as well as the Regency Inn located in Los Baños, California. Calls seeking comment from Mr. Patel to confirm this information were not immediately returned. Located at 330 Ocean Street, near Broadway in Santa Cruz, the Guest House International Pacific Inn's 36 rooms range in price from $40 to $200 per night. Friday's demonstration was organized by Jesus Fernandez of the Center for Community Advocacy, a nonprofit organization based in Salinas devoted to farm worker health and housing advocacy. According to Fernandez, Pravin Patel has been seeking to raise rents by as much as $500 on the Watsonville units since November 2001.
A one-bedroom unit has been increased from $475 to $650. There's been two-bedroom units that have been increased from $900 to $1,400, you know. And keep in mind, all these people are farm-working people.
Within minutes of their arrival Friday night in front of the motel, organizers reported that Pacific Inn's management turned on the water sprinkler system to keep them off the property. Police were also called to the scene, but no incidents were reported. Motel management declined to comment for this story. Daryl Darling, a Methodist pastor and owner of the Darling House Bed and Breakfast on West Cliff Drive, is a personal friend of Pravin Patel, as well as one of the lawyers representing the farm workers. He addressed the demonstration, saying essentially that he would intervene and try to mediate a settlement between the two parties. When asked for his opinion of the rent increase, Mr. Darling was somewhat evasive, saying,
"It's important to understand the whole situation. I'll do my best to understand all the aspects of the transactions and to see if we can come to what's just and fair for everyone."
But Tony Madrigal is hopeful that an equitable settlement can be reached.
We want something that's fair and negotiated. Negotiated rent increases are a lot more fair than simply high, enormous, imposed rent increases.
In the meantime, both parties will meet on Monday evening at 7 p.m. at the office of the Center for Community Advocacy in Watsonville. For Freak Radio Santa Cruz, my name's the V-Man. More than 60 mostly Spanish-speaking farm workers rallied outside the Guest House.
Yeah, I don't think we need to hear that again, but it was good. Thank you, V-Man, for giving us the scoop. It's too bad that Tony Madrigal and Daryl Darling and Scott Kennedy, no doubt, somewhere lurking in the background, and Eric Larson all don't get together and do something about rent control. You know, I mean, so instead of going after these little causes one by one, they ballyhoo a particular landlord and a concern, and I'm not saying it's good that they do, but they don't go after landlords generally who are abusive, and we don't get any surveys generally of what's going on in Watsonville or in the Beach Flats or other areas. I've got to admit to a personal bias with respect to Daryl Darling, who's one of the kind of the Kennedy clan here in town. Darling helped to sabotage and essentially is held responsible by some for being a part of the group that resulted in the death of homeless people back in 1995 when he and Scott Kennedy and Mike Rotkin essentially destroyed the open-air shelter, the Coral Street open-air shelter, which housed 250 homeless people at its height out there at near the Homeless Resource Center, what is now Community House property. They drove people off that land, allegedly, to build Community House, but the building didn't start for another, 16 months. It was a bogus thing. Darling has done that kind of thing before. He was part of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, and he and Paul Lee and that whole gang of folks, I don't know, That's way back then, so maybe he's doing something good now. Again, I'd like to see these folks come out for rent control. Kennedy sits on the city council, and for that matter, so does Crone. Obviously, they're not going to do anything. That it has to be the citizenry that does something. I'm just a little worried about what looks like concocted demonstrations by special groups, and I'm not sure that this is one of those, and I'd like to look into it more fully, and hopefully I will. If anybody has any information out there on the protest, let me know. I'd like to hear about it. Feel free to speak about it. And again, thanks to Vinny for giving us that report. Now this.
Gimme boys, got nothing to lean against in bed. Bony arms and shoulders only bruise my head. And when they try to wrestle me, I'll beat them pound for pound. Skinny boys got nothing to wrap your arms around. Skinny boys got vision, a godlike quality. But every time I greet one, there's nothing there to squeeze. All that wasted effort, all that vanity. Skinny boys got vision of immortality. Something about muscle-bound boys practicing to clean and jerk, pulling up their bodies for the shine. Never like those tail and lean boys. Too much pressure, too much work. Looking in the mirror for a sign. I just want a baby fat boy, double sized and double chin, belly big and pillow to my brain. I just want a spacious black boy, jump right on and sink right in, loving handles driving me insane. All of that extra weight, all of that extra muscle to play with, give me another reason to stay with a fat voice, that voice. Everyone cleans the plate, truly inspired, the last of us lingers to sit by the fire and lick off the fingers of the fat boys, fat boys. Skinny boys are losers who seem to try too hard, and every time they talk to me, they won't let down their guard. All that blind devotion, all that foolish pride. Skinny boys are losers with no plans left to hide. I don't want those wicked clean boys, so repressed and so refined, walking like their feet don't touch the ground. I don't want no mama's best boy, undeveloped, undefined, waiting for his chance to be profound. I just want an overgrown boy, unconditioned, unrehearsed, flesh and body waiting for the squeeze. Overweight and overblown boys, wet my whistle, quench my thirst, to be cheap, just drop it to my knees. All of that extra skin, all of that extra stuffy to your core, gives me another reason to burn for the fat boys, fat boys. Everyone wants to sin, truly discerning the last of us hovers, to turn up the music and turn on the covers with the fat boys, fat boys. So sweet, fat boys to fondle and bite, fat boys to feed me whenever we meet, fat boys to turn out the light, fat boys so ample to sample and hold, fat boys to brighten my day, fat boys so grand to manhandle and mold, fat boys to steal me away. All of that extra cheek, all of that extra cargo to carry, gives me another reason to marry the fat boys, fat boys. Everyone takes a peek, truly determined we go through the pace, we're pumping our chests and we're stuffing our faces for the fat boys, fat boys. Everyone takes a peek, truly determined we go through the pace, we're pumping our chests and we're stuffing our faces for the fat boys, fat boys.
Uncle Banzai, Fat Boys. Hey, a song that I was made for, and I love it. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. and we have a call.
You're on free radio.
That was a really cute song.
I think it was cool.
The only thing that I wanted to say was that there's a phenomenon that's been happening among young men. It's similar to anorexia, except for that it's called bigorexia.
A bulimia?
No, bigorexia, not bulimia.
Oh, really?
Bigorexia, which is where men are taking different kinds of steroids. They're eating, you know, they're taking these powders. They're trying all kinds of different things to make themselves look bigger. Hmm. And I just wanted to say that I really, really, really like a skinny guy.
Well, fine.
And I just wanted to share that with you.
Hey, thank you.
You're welcome.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Oh, well, there goes my chances. Anyway, that's fine. I'm glad. I think people should like people of all shapes and sizes, and fat boys tend to be, shall we say, well, like fat girls, discriminated against in the media and in employment often. It's us bulky types sometimes get the short end of the stick, so fat people unite. It's not the blubber on top. It's the stuff underneath that counts, and sometimes the blubber on top is pretty cool. But, hey, we won't talk about that now. We'll talk instead about those unfortunate downtown ordinances, the new downtown ordinances coming up tomorrow at City Council, 1 o'clock. And, again, probably be 1:30 or later, but you want to be sure to be in on the deal. Come as soon after 1 as you can. And or call City Council, 420-5017. You can do that now, even now as you're listening to your radio. 420-5017. That's the call-in number for the entire city council, and tell them it's time that you start addressing real issues downtown and in the city, like rent control. You've got to eliminate some of the really sore sticking points where homeless people actually have no legal places to go, and therefore naturally they try to gravitate to downtown and other places. And if you address the roots of things, then you won't have the kinds of problems that, well, who knows what kinds of problems you have, but you have to address the roots of things anyway. And to really address the problems downtown requires some real dialogue, not some backrooms shenanigans and some fast stuff where they zip through ordinances behind people's backs. You know, that's just not the way to go. And I think we've got to show people, those of us who are activists, that that's not going to be tolerated in this community. This is a community for everyone. Interestingly enough, as I left town the other day for Sacramento, I heard on the radio some group called talking about sort of similar to the rhetoric of the group Take Back Our Town in 1990, which talked about bringing your family downtown to stop all those panhandlers and homeless people from taking over the mall. And I welcome people's families to come downtown. I think that's great. But I think for there to be room for everyone, you need to have obviously more spaces. It'd be nice to shut off the streets for a while so there are actually the plazas and the kind of wonderful spaces you find at the few events of the year, you know, like the first night stuff. When it has been pointed out, the masses of people that come essentially dwarf the problems that happen, and it's a much better and more vibrant scene. What merchants and some of their advocates and city council mouthpieces often get into, and by the way, is Daryl Darling really a lawyer? I had never known that. I know he was a minister and a landlord, but I wasn't aware he was a lawyer, so that's news to me. But setting that aside, that's completely out of the blue. An interesting article by Carol Harvey in Poor magazine back in February is particularly relevant now. It happened after Santa Cruz, as I mentioned before, was declared one of the meanest cities in the United States in a national report from the National Law Center for Homelessness and Poverty. I'm going to read a story by her. Criminalizing poor Americans for being homeless, whose quality of life is this anyway? Disabled people have ADAYA. That's right. Disabled people have ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act. People of color, gay and lesbian people, fought to get civil rights protections. It's an outrageous scandal that poor people are deprived of civil rights which cannot be taken from other minorities. That's a quote from the editor of Street Spirit, Terry Messman. A snub-nosed blue van, grill like snarling hound's teeth, charged into the driveway straight at me. A heavy-set woman, her long, dark hair framing a pit bull face, growled out the window, "Stop bothering that woman." I live among swelligant robber barons, wryly termed specific whites by Project Friends. Strolling the evening sidewalk home at 7 p.m., I passed a mansion around the corner from my small Pacific Heights Victorian. A well-groomed woman chatted with a man in a speckled painter's cap between Doric columns on curving front steps. My backpack was humped with groceries. A black bag slung on one shoulder contained a tape recorder. I'll interrupt the story briefly to catch this phone call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert.
Hey there, Ed.
Hey, sorry about the jail fiasco. When I heard that, I thought, yep, the soldier cops, he got into the injustice system, the true injustice system.
It's pretty heavy in there, I'll tell you.
Yeah, the military, soldier cops.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and, people just don't give a fuck, huh?
It's hard to say. I think it's hard to give a fuck, as you'd put it, without, you know, when you're trying to juggle two jobs, and when you're, you know,
yeah.
Particularly when you're in jail, there's always the threat of physical violence going on.
What happens, though, when their sons or daughters, because the government imports the drugs into the cities, right? You know, that's a well-known fact. And then the jails are waiting for them. What happens when one of their sons or daughters ends up in there, granddaughters, grandsons,
well,
nieces,
I think,
nephews?
I think dealing with the drug war in
Santa Cruz... They find out there is no Bill of Rights.
I think dealing with the drug war and its destruction of the Bill of Rights and this bogus war on terrorism is really something that, interestingly enough, a lot of people who I disagree with on local issues would probably agree with me on. But unfortunately, they don't want to apply those lessons locally. Instead, we have people like Ed Porter ranting about heroin use, but not suggesting any more facilities that would
he's
deal with heroin problems.
He's a strange one, man. He just looks strange. And yet, you know, and then seeing what's happening right now, he is definitely strange. But anyway, my main call was I received a letter from the Green Party earlier this week,
mm-hmm.
and I was looking for donations and to join up and this and that. And the best they could do was they had some real rave reviews of themselves, advocating that the U.S. government recognize needs and rights of invisible victims of 1911, organizing for peace and justice by playing a major role in organizing April 20th March, which drew 7,100,000, calling for universal affordable health care for all Americans. That sounded kind of good. Calling for effective global warming policy, standing against mountaintop mining that is devastating the Appalachians, promoting a just and nonviolent settlement in the Middle East. And it's like, but what about the fucking homeless shit? You know, they don't, you know, and they want me to join this fucking stinking shithole? I don't think so. And plus, look at Fitzmaurice.
Yeah, Councilmember Fitzmaurice is a Green Party member.
They don't fucking eject him?
It is true. As far as I know, he has not been even criticized in any kind of formal way by the Green Party, though they've been talking about it at great length. And one of these days, actually, I'm hoping to get a report from the Green Party Assembly, which was held yesterday. They meet, I guess, the second Saturday of every month at 4 o'clock at Loudoun Nelson Center. And I will, actually, after I hang up with you, I'll give a call to Nutcracker Nick Whitehead and see what he has to say about it.
You know, when I call in and criticize like that, it's just like, it's so fucking hypocritical. There's good people. I've met them. You know, I know who are in the Green Party. But why join something that has nothing? It's like Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International, and then there's a third one. You know what I mean? All separate entities. There's no strength in that.
Well,
it's ridiculous. You know, and if you've got behind it, they're all funded by the great foundations. In other words, they're keeping them separated, so they really don't. You know what I mean?
Well, there's
can't people see through the ruse, the sham?
There's an argument to be said for separation, because if you get everything together and you. Then if people control that who are not the people you want, and it becomes corrupted, then you've got
like
one.
Like the Green Party.
Well, I don't think the corruption so much. The problem there has to do with their anxiety towards criticizing people in positions of power, and I think that's a real problem. You know, and people who are opportunistic, who have a lot of power, can move into these third parties, and you know, unless the activists call them on it, they. They can do stuff, which,
by a few of the members I know, you know, it has potential, at least in Santa Cruz, but as far as that, I refuse.
Well, I know the Green...
I'm still independent, just as I have been.
I know Green Party members and Green Party people in power are usually pretty bad. I mean, that's whether it's Feinstein in Santa Monica, whether it's the three Green Party Arcata City Council members, whether it's Fitzmaurice in Santa Cruz. They simply betray the Green Party California platform,
so
which is
civil
rights for the homeless.
You got a good dose of the... Excuse me, Robert.
Yeah.
You got a real good dose of the police state, didn't you?
Briefly, yeah. It was educational. Ed, thank you for the call. I'm going to roll.
Listen, I had a suggestion, too, a great book, Snitch Culture by Jim Redden.
Snitch
and
Culture.
Snitch Culture by Jim Redden explains all that. It's a wonderful book. You know, the way that the injustice system is, and the injustices and how it's turning into a police state.
By the way, while I have you on the phone, I'll let you and the others know that HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which has been meeting at Baker Square at 8:30, I think we're going to move our meetings, at least for the next couple of weeks, to 6 o'clock at the Farmer's Market near the Food Not Bombs meal. So if folks want to come there, that might be a more convenient place for people who are working people and so forth.
The phone was cutting out. You said 6 o'clock on Wednesday?
Yeah, 6 o'clock on Wednesday at the Farmer's Market.
Farmer's Market. Okay, Robert.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Hey, bye-bye.
Bye.
So, yeah, that's what's happening with HUF at the next meeting. I'd like to, if I can, see if I can get a report from old Nutcracker Nick Whitehead. He's actually worked with a group called SPAN. He's a co-founder of that with me, Stop Police Abuse Now, and he's been doing work, and I think we may be able to find him.
Hello. Looking for Nick Whitehead?
Yeah.
And that sounds like you, Nick Whitehead.
Oh, yeah, that's me, yeah.
So aren't you the infamous playwright and political activist known in song and story?
Yeah, Nutcracker Nick.
Ah, indeed, yes. So you went to a Green Party assembly yesterday, and I know you've been part of the Homeless Issues Working Group.
Yeah, there were a couple of things there. There was the behavior on the street, the new ordinances.
What's happening with that?
Well, the Green Party decided to support... ...there are on the street.
Huh. Excellent.
Rather than it becoming police matters.
And did they have any specifics?
There will be an official statement was composed, and it will be delivered.
I see. Do you have any idea when that is? Because the ordinances are going to be will be passed tomorrow.
I don't know. Are we on the air?
You are.
I don't know when that will be delivered. It was Louis LaFortune.
Aha, uh-huh, Louis LaFortune.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Well, that's good. I mean, I'm glad to hear that the Green Party has done something. Was it a very big meeting? I know that sometimes you got your big meetings.
No, it wasn't a real big meeting.
Okay.
But it was representative. It was a good cross-section of local Greens.
That's good. And I guess the Homeless Issues Working Group has...
Well, there was another thing that came up there, aspect provision of low-cost housing. A group called AHA...
Affordable Housing Advocates.
Affordable Housing Advocates. They came in, Paul Wagner and Mark Premack was actually there for a little while.
Gag me with a spoon.
Yeah, it's the first time he showed up at a regular Green Assembly.
Mm-hmm.
And there was some other person from that same advocate group, Paul Foster.
Mm-hmm.
And they spoke to the need to expedite the construction of more granny units.
I'll buy that.
Those would be second units or add-on extensions
mm-hmm.
to existing neighborhood houses where the property space permits. And they want to expedite it so that people who want to build affordable units can do so without too much bureaucracy, red tape, and cost.
Did they explain what the status of that was? I know that there was some kind of limited action taken at City Council recently.
Huh. Yeah, well, this would go further than that.
Good. So
we decided to support that.
And I guess...
So Tim McCormick had presented us a letter in advance that he was leery of doing such a thing.
Tim Fitzmaurice or Tim McCormick?
I beg you, Tim Fitzmaurice.
And what did our good city council member object to?
He thought that by expediting this, there could be questions raised by the opponents, and they might force the city to do a costly EIR, an environmental impact report,
mm-hmm.
which I presume would be covering such things as extra parking burdening a neighborhood or extra noise because new constructions might be closer to existing neighbors' houses, and well, those things certainly have to be taken into account. But
mm-hmm.
I would say on a case by case basis, yeah.
So Tim was not at the meeting.
Yeah, he was at the beginning, but he just spent the time to hand us a letter saying why he doesn't think this is a great idea.
Did he give any opinions of the downtown ordinances?
No, he didn't address that.
I see. What about the issue that has really been bouncing around the Green Party for the last year and a half about accountability for people like Fitzmaurice, who seem to be violating the Green Party's platform pledge to decriminalize such things as sleep for homeless people?
That actually hasn't been discussed by the Green Assembly for quite a while. I think on two occasions in the past, as you know, the Assembly sent strongly worded letters, I thought, to the entire City Council, saying it's time to get to work on either reducing the impact of the sleeping ban or eliminating it entirely.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is the sense of the Green Party, there's no doubt about it.
And yet it hasn't repudiated Fitzmaurice, who is in
essence... Wait a minute, you say haven't repudiated him, but
right.
When he says he might run again, he's still making up his mind. There wasn't a great acclamation, you know, there's about a dozen Greens at the meeting yesterday, and I noticed that his words just fell into a kind of vacuum there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think that Fitzmaurice is terribly well regarded by Greens for a number of reasons, because I think that he's regarded as kind of a liability, but I note that he has not been publicly censured or publicly held accountable.
The people aren't... Some of the older Greens... maybe they don't come to the meetings as much, but the older, more experienced politically Greens who run on election campaigns or maybe themselves been holding public office, I think they're more likely to back Tim Fitzmaurice because they know you can never get a perfect candidate. You can get somebody to do something.
I think that he's so far from perfect on these issues that I think...
And I posited to Louis, well, if Fitzmaurice doesn't run or Greens don't want to back him with much enthusiasm, say, then you might get somebody like Cynthia Matthews getting into position there, and who is more conservative, if you think Fitzmaurice is a conservative, maybe just a bit of a lame duck.
Isn't this the argument that Al Gore uses to avoid Ralph Nader?
Yeah. But this is how some voters make their minds up. Living wage, you see, living wage is a big issue. Tim Fitzmaurice definitely worked positively to bring about living wage for people who do work for the Parks and Recreation Department.
A few people are getting a living wage, but a very few. You know, you and I are not going to agree on this. In fact,
Cynthia Matthews, for instance, wouldn't do that, and she tried to stop her own workers from unionizing in the Planned Parenthood.
Right, and probably Adolf Hitler would have had some of a shot, but I don't know if we should choose between those three. You know, I think we have to...
No, I'm not saying we should. I'm saying some people do it that way. That's the kind of thinking they go along.
Right, but I'm wondering why the Green Party isn't repudiating Fitzmaurice based on his failures.
I think because we know that he's made some moves to get a family shelter built on the existing Coral Street shelter property. They're still raising money for that, but it is a project that's in the works, and he's put some effort into that.
That's not controversial. Rotkin and Matthews would vote for that.
I didn't say it's controversial. I said it's constructive.
Well, it's not the point. If he is continuing to deny homeless people rights every night, and yet he's voting for a project that everybody else on the council would vote for anyway, that's no basis for supporting him when he's violating the Green Party platform. But I don't, you know, and you and I probably disagree on this issue, and that's okay.
Yes, I think you have to understand the process in the Green Party. We're going to look at his overall record.
Mm-hmm.
We're actually going to look at his overall record, which I think scans, keeps a record of all the votes of all the city council people, and they publish it once a year, especially just before elections.
Well, the fact is that they haven't done such a balancing. There's never been an analysis of his overall record in any open forum.
We haven't needed to do that, but now that there's an election coming up, it's very critical that we don't delay that any further.
Green Party member Becky Johnson in February of 2000... and one brought this issue to the Green Party Assembly, and you did need to do it, because if you have internal democracy, that's what you were supposed to do, and in fact, it was sent to your committee, Nick, and rather than deal with it, it broke down in attacks on activists like myself and Becky, which we've hopefully gotten beyond.
Yeah, we sure have.
But, let's move on to, I think, a thing which I really...
There's one more thing you need to know, because we don't actually have another Green Party candidate definitely running. Bonnie Moore might run if she can find some funding sources. That's a big thing with her.
Mm-hmm.
But Steve Argue is definitely a candidate who's been discussed with some favor, I might say, by significant Greens.
Go Steve.
Yeah, so whereas last time we didn't end up endorsing him, this time he would have a much better shot of being helped in his campaign somehow by the Green Party.
Yeah, Steve has a show on Free Radio Santa Cruz every Saturday. I believe it's from 8 to 10 for those who want to tune in. I could have that wrong.
And if the Green Party made that decision to support him, they would have to be much stricter about the sleeping ban, because that's a big, big issue with Steve Argue.
Yeah, well, I mean, of course, the Green Party could endorse Steve, and Steve could continue to criticize the Green Party, because I think he doesn't have much use for it. But, I mean, I think he would appreciate support.
Well, then I think you're sort of killing off his endorsement right there by what you said.
Well, again...
Now we have to go to Steve and say, is this true? Are you just wanting to play the role of a critic of the Green Party? You can't really be soliciting...
Well, I'm not a spokesperson... Hold it. I'm not a spokesperson for Steve Argue. You should talk to him directly. I didn't know. I'm candid about what I think about these issues, Nick, and that's how it is.
10% of the electorate, and I don't think somebody like Steve Argue can afford to throw it away.
I don't think he is, and I'm not speaking for him.
I mean, we're open to valid criticism to shape our policies, and Steve Argue can come and argue his point, as it were, before.
Well, I don't want to talk about Steve Argue. You should really talk to him directly about these issues. I'm saying that, as far as I'm concerned, the Green Party has sold out on the sleeping ban for the last year and a half.
Well, why do you retain your membership in the Green Party?
Because I think that there has to be some kind of internal monitoring of what goes on, and I think that...
Well, I mean, the fact is, if you lost the battle to make the Green Party jump harder on individual city council people... That just means that at the time you didn't have the numbers with you. I'm not saying you're still in that position. You might have the numbers with you now, but...
It wasn't the numbers at all. It had to do with people at the center of the party. There was never any vote ever taken about Fitzmaurice. People at the center of the party and in key party positions like yourself, Nick, exercise a kind of power in this situation. Whether it's to hold committee meetings, you haven't held a homeless issues working group meeting all month as far as I know. I mean, I think that, and I think that, I didn't intend this to be, by the way, this kind of a critical discussion. I do appreciate your giving us the update from the Green Party Assembly, and I really would like, rather than get into these kinds of discussions with you, although I don't mind it if you want to, I am particularly interested in hearing how your radio play potentially is coming.
At 2 o'clock today, I've got a bunch of actors and actresses coming around. I'm auditioning them, and they're it's a satirical play.
Remind us of the title and again of the substance of what this play is about.
It's called Homeless in Outer Space, and it's a situation where the council, which includes Professor, it's a conjectural, futuristic thing where Councilman Professor Glotkin is on there, and Scintilla Malthus has become the mayor again, and they have a plan to send the homeless into another planet.
Mm-hmm. And this is
and the homeless succeed on the other planet. That's the whole point.
That's sort of like I see. And are auditions still open for this? This is a radio play we're talking, right?
Yeah, auditions are open. People should give me a call at 475-2012, 475-2012.
And this is happening today in about 50 minutes. You're going to be doing some auditions.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't want people showing up. That's just short notice, because I've got quite a bunch today. But we audition every weekend, and if people need a week night or even a weekday audition, I can arrange that. 475-2012. Mm-hmm. Nutcracker and Nick.
Yeah. Hey.
A lot of fun.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing the results of this, and maybe as well as Plotkin, Slathews, and...
Plotkin, Grotkin, and Plotkin, the three-faced political monster.
I see. I remember that's what we called the three candidates in 1998 that were running for the beach south of Laurel.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the three candidates that won, Fitzmaurice, Crone, and Sugar, turned out to be the three faces, unfortunately. But.
And I remember your face-to-face debate on UCSD campus with Mr. Grotkin.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that was something. That was a drama. It had its comedic moments, too.
Well, the trouble is that that's sort of old history. We have are the new candidate, the new old guard, as I call them, Porter, Riley, Fitzmaurice, Cronin, Sugar, who...
Now, Sugar is not going to run.
Right, but I'm talking about the people who are in power right now. We got them for another 4 months. They're passing laws tomorrow.
They could be doing useful stuff, and they could be doing negative things.
Now, so I take it you may be at the city council meeting tomorrow?
I'll try to be there, yeah.
It's kind of a difficult time.
I'll be a bit late.
1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Is
kind of
at the city council chamber?
I believe so.
I'll try to be there. I'll get a bit late.
I've been talking with Nick Whitehead again. If you want to audition for his radio play...
You're not supposed to reveal my true identity.
I'm sorry. Nutcracker Nick. Sorry, Nick.
Yeah.
Who is...
I'm anonymous.
He is anomalous. And he could be reached at 475-2012.
Yeah, and people can be in the play and always talk politics to me. That's cool.
I like that.
My opinions are changing all the time. That's like cool.
And we even do it publicly here on free radio.
Yeah.
Thank you, Nick.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, we got about 20 minutes left on Free Radio Santa Cruz. No, I don't speak for Steve, and Steve doesn't speak for me. We have some opinions we share and some we disagree on, but I think we agree on the sleeping ban and the camping ban, and I only wish that some Green Party people had some oomph on that one. Thank you very much.
Hi there, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert.
Hey, that sounds like a Peace and Freedom Party man.
Yeah. Hi.
How are you doing there, Bernard?
You know, fairly good. I've been listening to your show, and I think I have a few comments and an invitation. I think I wanted to start with, Ed.
Oh, you mean Ed, endorsed by the Green Party, but doesn't seem to do anything he's agreed to, Porter?
No, I'm not talking about Mr. Porter. I'm talking about the Ed that called, before your last call.
Oh, Ed House, yes. Go ahead.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Ed, if you're listening, I'd like to invite you and the rest of Radio Land to come over at Baker Square tonight from around 6 o'clock until about 7:30. We're going to get together and talk, Steve Argue.
Mm-hmm.
And if I understood the drift of your message, Ed, you were kind of, thinking, that other groups really ought to get together, and that's the kind of politics that I am in, trying to get groups to be more solidarity, together. So if you'd like to come and join us, and talk about, the possibility, of changing power in this town.
And I guess this invitation is extended to just to Ed, but it's open to the public. This is a meeting. This is the Steve Argue for City Council committee, right?
Right.
That's at 6 o'clock?
Well, not really. It's not that. It's really the Progressive Federation.
Ah, Progressive Federation. And what? And as you want to tell us something about what you guys will be discussing and who you are?
Well, we're going to be discussing more or less Stephen Argue's campaign. And a lot of things that Steve is running on is the same things that the organization has endorsed, like getting rid of the sleeping ban, instituting rent control, setting up preference voting, proportional representation, helping working class, organize unions, that type of thing. And we really want to start talking to people that wants to start a conversation about changing power in this town. It's not about so much about talking about issues. We fairly well have agreed, on that platform. But we want to talk about really changing power and the things that we need to do.
I'd like to read from this thing.
Building seeds. So that that can happen. And so we're interested in those type of discussions.
So that'll be at Baker Square at about, 6 o'clock tonight?
Right.
And Baker Square, of course, is at 1107 Ocean Street. It's between kind of a block or two down from Denny's. And it's where we used to have our Huff meetings.
Right. And then I wanted to talk to you a little bit about, the Green Party on that discussion you just had.
Oh, yeah.
I really want to put I don't think Nick is probably listening to us because he can't get, probably that radio station in from where he lives, free radio.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd just like to say to anybody else out there, that is in the Green Party, if what
why do you need a Green Party if you're not going to hold your candidates accountable? The Democrats and Republicans certainly do not. I mean, we always have corruption. It's endless corruption in those two parties. So why have another, you know, another institution if you're not going to hold them accountable? That's the glue that can hold your constituency together, is the accountability factor. So when he's rationalizing that, you know, when he says, well, we haven't had time, you know, this and that, well, Fitzmaurice has been in there now 4 years.
4 bad years, actually, and I haven't heard Nick introduce resolutions, or anybody else for that matter, other than Becky, to hold him accountable. And I guess Thomas Levitt tried something sort of recently, but I think that's fallen on the back burner. I mean, I like Nick, you know, and I can't really, I've had some serious fallings out with him on this issue, and also there was a really kind of serious form of red baiting, which you call it, Norse baiting, going on in the Green Party about a year ago. They were,
that's either here or there.
Well, it was here. It was both here and there, in the sense that the reason they were going after me was because I was asking that Fitzmaurice be held accountable, that they follow their Green Party platform, and they just didn't want to even talk about it. Instead, it was much more important to go after me, and it was a sad situation. And that has changed, partially due to the Camp Paradise, Camp Hope situation, where they were, you know, they took an interest in that project. But, you know, they still haven't. They're obviously hopeless on the Fitzmaurice issue, it seems like to me. I mean, I don't see any.
Well, what about Ed Porter? They've got to deal with him, too.
Oh, well, I mean, they're generally hopeless on that issue. I mean, they make nice-sounding statements, but then don't apply them to real people, so it doesn't make much difference, as you pointed out. You're not accountable. And I guess they like to say, nobody's perfect. Well, they haven't, you know, they...
I don't know what that means.
What that means is that he puts forward resolutions on transportation that we like, that he does other things that we think are positive, and therefore we will ignore his human rights violations. It's an argument that's as old as time. Anyway, I appreciate your calling in, Bernard. Anything you want to add?
No, not really. I just wanted to put that out.
Yeah, thank you. And we'll talk to you perhaps at 6 o'clock tonight. Who knows?
Bye-bye.
And, 4273772 is our phone number here at Free Radio. This is the closing 10 minutes of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I'm going to continue reading the story. Whose quality of life is this anyway? I live among swelligant robber barons, Riley termed specific whites, by Project Friends, strolling the evening sidewalk past a mansion around the corner from my small Pacific Heights Victorian. A well-groomed woman chatted with a man in a speckled painter's cap between Doric columns on curving front steps. My backpack was humped with groceries. A black bag slung on one shoulder contained a tape recorder. I had been dizzy and sick in my tiny Victorian apartment. A neighbor pointed out this house as a paint fume source. I called politely to the woman. Are you painting? Construction. No painting. Suddenly she ordered, get out of here, I'll call the police. Shocked, I retorted, what self-entitled fantasy land do you live in? It's a public sidewalk. Her abrupt turn warned me that she was headed for the phone. I continued home, fuming. By what right does she threaten me? I'm getting her address. I went back, and the unmarked van charged. What if I said I was plainclothes police, she yelled. I'd say, produce ID and stop harassing me. I circumnavigated the vehicle, noting the house number. Get out of here, barked the rent-a-cop at my back. No shit, I thought. I'd just been profiled. Interesting timing. I had met that day with Terry Messman, gentle street spirit editor, and viewed video of the press conference on the criminalization of the homeless on the steps of the state building in McAllister and Van Ness in San Francisco. Tuesday, January 15th, advocates from the San Francisco Coalition on Homelessness and the National Coalition in Washington held simultaneous press conferences marking the release of an official study of 80 cities that uncovered a massive new wave of nationwide repression against the unhoused. It revealed a severely worsening national climate in which civil liberties, rights of free speech, of assembly, the right to sit, to stand, to sleep, to perform natural functions of daily life, the very right to exist, are punished as, quote, quality of life crimes, and denied to this most vulnerable, impoverished group. Lacking private spaces in which to carry out life-sustaining activities such as sleeping, resting, storing personal belongings, or activities associated with personal hygiene, people experiencing homelessness face the further indignity of arrest. The press conferences marked the 73rd anniversary of Martin Luther King's birth. King was assassinated during his last great poor people's campaign, championing the right to housing, employment, and income for those unable to work. Paul Bowden, high-powered, intense, San Francisco Coalition on Homelessness director, told me, of 36 cities originally studied in 1999, 65% increased the numbers of laws used to incarcerate and harass homeless people. Of the 80 cities surveyed, 90% of them are implementing anti-panhandling laws. The report shows that cities across the country are using the same patterns, methodologies, and laws to criminalize and eliminate homeless people. This is not a coincidence. More jurisdictions are enacting laws that effectively criminalize homelessness by prohibiting activities such as sleeping or camping in public, even when no shelter beds are available, and that the use of these ordinances is increasing. Meanwhile, 100% of the communities surveyed lack enough shelter beds to meet demand. Special mention goes to Palm Beach County, Florida, for their chillingly Orwellian methods of tracking homeless people. The sheriff's office developed a homeless database accessible on the internet, including information on the next of kin, previous medical treatment to include broken bones, photographs of tattoos, and the last place the individuals received dental treatment, used to identify deceased and missing individuals, including prostitutes, and, quote, develop a list of suspects. Bowden told me, Supervisor Gavin Newsom is proposing an ordinance that includes fingerprinting and a centralized information database on every homeless person to be implemented by the new Department of Homeless Services. If Palm Beach County's methods give evidence of a trend of considering homeless individuals to be criminals simply because of their economic status and lack of homes, then San Francisco may soon become equally draconian. The report distinguishes California as the meanest state in the country for people who are poor and homeless, with New York City vying with Atlanta, Georgia, and San Francisco, California, the three meanest cities nationally, for top notoriety. Santa Cruz, a purportedly liberal community, was high on the list. According to Chance Martin, Street Sheet editor, the report was a joint effort between the National Law Center on Homelessness and Poverty and the National Coalition for the Homeless. The entity organizing this report was the National Homeless Civil Rights Organizing Project, NCROP, a study done by the National Coalition Civil Rights Work Group. The National Coalition on Homelessness has regional offices in New York, Atlanta, Kentucky, Washington, D.C., Chicago, Texas, Los Angeles. Bowden notes the solidarity and education are ways of dealing with the situation. The challenge reflects our ability to bring these groups together. United, we are strong. Every local fight around quality of life enforcement programs is about all these homeless people in our city, all these people on my street. When you realize that's actually millions of people on streets all over this country, you have a better context to debate, fight, challenge, and hopefully reverse the trend and stop it. Northern California speakers were Lillian Hansen of CCROP. Cliff Crooks of SHOC, Sacramento Homelessness Organizing Committee, described five-day incarcerations in Sacramento just for the crime of sleeping. Maliaga Togatoga, Community Homeless Alliance Ministry San Jose, noted the Human Rights Declaration drafted in San Francisco guaranteed jobs, homes, health care, saying if America doesn't solve this problem, we are doomed. Becky Johnson Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom in Santa Cruz, spoke of privatization of downtown public space, excluding the homeless. Ken Lane, Stanislaus County, Modesto, described armed police sweeps of camps. L.S. Wilson, San Francisco, Oren Selstrom, Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights, and James Tracy from San Francisco's Right to a Roof spoke eloquently. Kamiko Burton for Senator John Burton said, I'm glad St. Francis isn't around to see his namesake city labeled one of the meanest in the nation. The vast majority of people are interested in real and humane solutions to homelessness. Lisa Williams Hastings, law student, asserted, the economic argument behind criminal law is to raise the price of criminal activity so people choose not to do it, substituting legal activity. But there is no available substitute for camping on streets, sitting, or pissing on sidewalks. If you fine the activity, a $100 ticket for sleeping on the street or be put in jail, income is going to be less. The penalty will increase the activity you want to deter. Such activities are not performed cause sickness and death. Under individual costs of criminalization, says the report, once people do their jail time, they are still homeless. In his speech, Bowden asked, whose quality of life are we talking about? The quality of life of poor people that are being put in our streets with no access to alternatives, or the quality of life of Tony Hall, Gavin Newsom, Willie Brown, politicians using 30-second sound bites to get elected by beating on poor people? And perhaps that's what these downtown ordinances are all about. Identify the enemy, attack the enemy, get elected to public office. I asked Bowden why the study concluded San Francisco and California are the worst human rights violators. People working compiling the data found no state close to California. The number of laws, the heavy enforcement of those laws, the lack of state funding for health care and housing for poor people, the tone, the brutal language used by our local politicians, as in the media and in city hall meetings, to describe homeless and poor people as bums, derelicts, the dialogue around piss and shit in California is powerful. In the fifth largest economy in the world, state policies and laws are driven by corporate money and slimy boys overwhelmingly. An overall finding of the study, systematic abuse of the civil rights of homeless people is used as a strategy to remove homeless people from sight by local governments and private business districts. However, Paul Bowden explains, homeless people's organizations are becoming stronger and united to defend our rights to housing, treatment, living wage jobs, and quality education. People who are homeless will not disappear or cease to exist. And there's a lot more in this article, but I don't have time to read it. I got to get rolling here. I do want to play, before I leave, this fine song inspired by the Mammary Manifesto. This is called Penis Envy, or it might be called If I Had a Penis, for all you women out there. Have no fear. The next meeting of Huff, as I mentioned before, is going to be Wednesday at 6 o'clock, though some Huff members will be at the 1 o'clock council session tomorrow, and there is a meeting of the Progressive Federation at 6 o'clock tonight at Baker's Square. You can also call Huff for more information. That's 423-HUFF. Thanks for being with me, and see if you envy me this song.
If I had a penis, I'd wear it outside in cafes and car lots with pomp and with pride. If I had a penis, I'd pamper it proper. I'd stay in the tub and use me as a stopper. If I had a penis, I'd take it to parties, stretch it and stroke it and shout it at smarties. I'd take it to pet shows and teach it to stay. I'd stuff it in turkeys on Thanksgiving Day. I'd rival my bodies in sports cars and stick shifts. I'd shower my fire with girlies and gifts. I'd peek around corners, I'd aim at my toilet. I'd poke it at foreigners and soap it and oil it. If I had a penis, I'd run to my mother, comb out the hair and compare it to brother. I'd lance her, I'd knight her, my hands would indulge. Hands would sink tighter and buckle and bulge. A penis to plunder, a penis to push, cause one in the hand is worth one in the bush. A penis to love me, a penis to share. To pick up and play with when nobody's there. I'd sit like a guy, I'd straddle the chair. I'd play with my fly, albeit with care. I'd dip it in chocolate, I'd stick it in sockets. I'd stroll to the movies with hands deep in pockets. I'd stick it in vacuums on vacant verandas, gas-guzzling bottles and poodles and pandas and puddles and drain pipes and doggies and ditches, pools and puddles and puddles and bitches, zucchinis and zebras, tomatoes, tomatoes and pineapple pumpkins and gulches and grottos and melons and marshmallows,
gloves and gorillas,
slurpees and slippers, chinooks and chinchillas. A penis to plunder, a penis to push, cause one in the hand is worth one in the bush. A penis to love me, a penis to share. To pick up and play with when nobody's there.
If I had a penis, I'd climb every mountain.
I'd force it on females, I'd pee like a fountain.
If I had a penis, I'd still be a girl. But I'd make much more money and conquer the world.
rest man. Sing a political truth now to an apathetic dialect. You wanna close down the farmer's market, open another chain store corporation, send an old princess information, the homeless catch a flame again.
Where are they?
Well, I'll tell you where they've gone. They've gone elsewhere.
out of their homes and or they have moved to other communities. The reason for this is that in its infinite wisdom, the city of Santa Cruz has decided that art is a commodity. It is a marketable thing. And since it is, it requires permits. You have to have permits for displaying merchandise, and you have to have permits for selling merchandise. So it's kind of a double whammy kind of a thing. And in effect, what it does is it takes out all the incentive of people that are working very individually in creating small items by hand try and share those things with the community.
Okay, so like one of the things, the arguments that some of the people who sign some of these things are saying is that, okay, we have a gallery here and we're trying to sell art, and we pay a lot of licensing fees and rent a store and whatnot, and here are these people like just trying to sell stuff on the street. Now, why are that those different markets?
Well, number one, the retailer is a person who actually does secondhand kind of work, in that
here
what
we
they
are.
Do is they take the artist's work and then they mark it up and then they retail it out. So their business is to make a profit, not so much on what the artist can do, because they try and get the artist to take the least amount of money for their wares, but they actually make their money on having the store to market the merchandise in. And that's all well and good. What I've said to people is the merchants that have come here to take advantage of this being a tourist town and that sort of thing, a nice mellow community and all, which is all well and good. But what they've found over here is that because of the economic setback that the earthquake created, that their rents are very high. When they rebuilt the downtown area, they made sure that the building spaces were very large, so small people couldn't actually rent those spaces. But they also wanted to make sure that they were getting X number of thousands of dollars a month in rent. So the fact that these folks are paying a lot of rent and then they're paying business taxes and such on top of that is unfortunate. It's an unfortunate part of the economics of the time. But these people chose to come to Santa Cruz not just, I don't believe, just for the fact that they thought that they could get a lot of money from the community here, but because the people actually wanted to live in this community, because it is an open and progressive type of a community. And I think that they moved into our community. We didn't move into their community.
Right, and so now you're seeing a shift in demographics.
Exactly, and now the people with the money are flexing their money muscles, and the city council is responding to that. And that's really unfortunate, because the city council is saying that they are responding to the will of the community, and I don't see that as the case at all. Somebody said at the last meeting that, 95% of the community isn't even aware of a lot of what's going on in terms of the changes in ordinances that they're proposing and so on and so forth, or have no real good idea of what's going on. And the city council and the powers that be in the business community are making that happen for a purpose.
Also, I mean, I just want to see another comment. If you go to frazadelic.com and you read people's stories and you look at the artwork that they have for sale that they were attempting to get for donation on the street, it's not the kind of thing that you're going to find in a gallery.
Absolutely, absolutely.
It's not the same market at all.
No, it's not. And again, most of this stuff is handmade. You could not really. There was a proposal somebody made of having all the musicians and artists find sponsors, in effect, in the merchants that are on the streets. And what you would do would be to go to, like, for instance, I have CDs out at Streetlight Records.
Right.
Okay, so you find an outlet for your merchandise, and then you put a little sign up as you were playing saying, if you really want to buy some of this stuff, you go to Streetlight Records, okay? Now, that's all well and good, and that should be used, but I have a feeling, like you're saying, that there's not going to be too many of those merchants out there that are willing to have the street traffic that wouldn't
that would come to the people that are outside.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Matthew. Is that that most musicians would not like to support some would not like to support the capitalist paradigm by actually trying to plug in, so to speak, to a streetlight or something like that, or another merchant in that case. I mean, there might be that would be limiting somebody's expression right there.
That's correct. Yeah. Yeah. I'll elaborate on that. Yeah, that's exactly right. I have chosen the path of doing the independent releases. Seriously considered going to record companies, blah blah blah, but you jump through the hoops, you
right.
play the game,
right.
You do what they say, you lose basically your art in the process. And so what I have done is I have created my own studio, done my own CDs, and have attempted various ways to market those outside. I'm using an internet website and that sort of thing to market those outside the industrial complex, so to speak.
So you should give us that website if you...
Okay, well, let's see, and it would be, it's a very complex, okay, it's a www.ilresources, which is all one word, ilresources.com/Mike with a capital M, True with a capital T all together, then dash, singer, dash, songwriter, dot, HTM, right, there we go. so if you go to ilresources.com, there are links from that site there. It's another site that I run.
So is that an independent kind of thing?
Yes.
So, yeah, I guess the one thing that I wanted to point out is that, like, a gallery or, you know,